Welcome to the Venus Index Podcast. I'm John Barbin. With me is Nicola Bird. And this is the start of a new regular podcast we're doing with Nicola. And it's basically a question-answer style where the community, you guys, are going to give us your questions. And then I guess I'll facilitate it, but really, Nicola, you're answering mostly. And we're going to cover the emotional mental game of getting your body in shape, because it's the I say 90% of it's in your mind. It's like, it's, if you can't get that part straight, you'll eventually, you're not going to get the body part straight. So I can teach you what you're supposed to do for your body, but if you can't get your head straight, then it'll be hard to follow through. And so on that note, I've asked people to send in questions. It seems like everyone's a little shy, but there is stuff we can work with. And I can sort of tell what you're struggling with regardless, just by poking around the forums and blogs. So today we're going to cover self-sabotage. And so, Nicola, I just sent you roughly what we were going to talk about. But in general, it's the concept that people can get a certain distance. They start off with some momentum. And when I say distance, I mean like dieting. And they start changing their body. They start losing weight. And then somewhere along the line, even though they 100% know logically what they need to do, they just don't. They just don't follow through. They don't get it done. And then they wonder why they keep hitting this point. And it seems like everyone has a point where they start to do this self-sabotage thing, or at least a lot of us run into it. And I don't know, you're going to have to maybe explain to me why this happens. But it seems like everyone can get going and everyone can get some result, and then at some point they stop. So it's not like they stop dead in their tracks at the beginning. They make it some distance. So obviously, without assessing people directly, what are the generalities of how we get to this point?
Hi, John. Thanks for having me. So, all right, well, you've asked a few questions all at the same time and a few points. Well, you're right. You said everyone, you're right, can get out the gate because we have an intention, a drive for an achievement. It's part of human nature. And so we all have a goal that we set. But at the same time, we set a goal, and most people set off on their goals with optimism, and a certain kind of an ideal model or a fantasy about this. When they achieve this particular goal, it'll kind of, you'll have this reward. Mm-hmm. So the initial motivation is the reward you're going to get when you achieve the goal. And our minds function on reward systems. And the problem, of course, is that you're not looking at all the way the things that are sabotaging in your mind, or just earlier experiences that you've had that give a negative relationship between the goal or the conflicts that you will arise in you. So you'll set off with a good intention, but without the preparation to meet the different challenges that you're going to encounter, which will be personal, and without a recognition of those, then when you encounter them, you won't really have the tools in place to manage them. Mm-hmm. And all of us work, like I said, on good intentions. Mm-hmm. You know, you say, I don't know anyone who doesn't set on any new task or journey without good intentions.
Right. So it's almost like you can ride that good intention wave for the first, I don't know, three to six weeks or something like that.
Because you're looking and you're seeing the reward, like, I'm going to get this when I do that. Mm-hmm. I do this, this is going to be the reward. But what happens when you encounter all the challenges that you're going to meet?
Mm-hmm. Along the way, yeah.
Yes, and if you meet something, like you come to Venus, you see your approach, which is very exciting. And the people that I work with doing your program, they're all very excited about the program and very enthusiastic about it. They love it. They think it's the dietary approach. Many have said it's simple, it's easy to follow. Most people reporting they love the exercise programs, and they're happy with the concept. So the program itself, they're loving. They would step out the gate then very enthusiastic. Liking, I've heard people say they haven't enjoyed the other exercise, they haven't been able to maintain. When they do yours, they really like it. So, you know, you're entering in really enthusiastic, liking the approach, seeing that it can work for you, working around it. So you're heading out with positive intentions, excitement about it, enjoying the process. And then, but the point is, like in everything else, when we, and just like even you enter a new relationship, you meet someone, then it's like, oh, they're going to rescue you. And then you have to encounter whatever challenges. And then,
and when you say challenges, it's not a nuts and bolts technical challenge like you run into an exercise you can't do.
No.
It's an emotional or mental, it's all that type of challenge. It's like life throws you some sort of emotional, mental stress curveball. And then can you handle that while you're trying, while you're still trying to put the effort into this? Because the diet is a daily effort. Like you,
yes.
Some of your emotional, mental reserve, like we call it ego depletion. I don't know what the actual, there's so many terms for it, but your daily sort of emotional, mental reserve, a chunk of it gets used up in the diet and workout, especially in the diet. So if all of it gets used up dealing with some other stress, there's nothing left to stick to the diet. And that's my simple way of explaining why you fail in those days. But what you're saying is it's because you're unprepared to deal with that thing.
You're unprepared. You haven't dealt with it. And you're not, if you're not aware enough of these kind of mind tapes, your self-talk, your emotional struggles, your emotional relationship with food, your mental relationship with food, and even outside of food, just experiences in life that are challenging that then deplete your momentum. And because food is such an easy life escape, I mean, food itself is a reward. So losing weight, getting an ideal, reaching your ideal body goal is a reward, but food is also a reward. Mm-hmm. And when you were talking about earlier statement that you said, and I just can't recall exactly what it is, but this is, it's really about that tiered system of rewards that we have, meaning that we want this, but we also want something else. Mm-hmm. And on any given moment, or just we have one thing will feel more rewarding than that other thing. And so we'll go in that direction. So if in this given moment the drive or the need for solace from food or that item feels more rewarding than the goal of the body ideal or the body goal or the weight goal, then that moment, that food is going to drive you because it's going to feel more rewarding than in that moment because you're going for one, the diet is delayed gratification. Whereas this is an immediate quick fix. And if you have, and it's impossible not to have a relationship with food because food is survival.
You have to have it every day.
Have to have it every day. It's the first relationship we have.
Yeah, I guess so.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I mean.
And it will outlast every one of your other relationships.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So. And if you're not taking all of these factors into account, which when a person is enthusiastically setting out on a journey, a new dietary health exercise journey with a good intention, and all of these, you might be aware or you're thinking, I'm going to be able to succeed this time, then you're really, in many ways, you're setting yourself up because you're not accounting for all the different challenges you're going to face. It's like, this is going to save me. This is going to rescue me. It's, you know, food, exercise, eating healthy, eating well, feeding yourself well, is a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle discipline. It's not a quick fix. Mm-hmm. And
well, would you say, okay, so I just had a thought, or at least a way to explain this. So with the sort of emotional, mental daily energy reserve, we kind of agree that you've only got so much capacity in a day. And when you take on a diet, you've basically allocated a huge chunk of that reserve
right.
to the diet instead of your daily, whatever else you do in a day. And then, so let's say you've got this 12-week pattern.
Yes.
And you've allocated, you know, 40% of that energy.
Mm-hmm.
Which really, because you wake up, the very first thing you're going to go eat, you're like, oh, right, I'm not supposed to eat that right now. I'm supposed to eat this. Or I'm like, it's automatically drawing from you. It's drawing energy from you to, like, stick to that. So there's less energy. Mental and emotional, and I'm not making this up. It's actually a scientific thing. It's like, you know, it's not literally glucose, but it is. I don't know. We can call it psychic energy. I know they call it ego depletion as you drain throughout the day. I don't know what a better word is, but I think we all understand.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as you take this task on,
yes,
you've limited how much you have to deal with everything else, and then what it does is it brings to the surface all of the other things that really challenge you.
Yes.
And then when you hit one of those things, either it's like a fight with a spouse, some sort of conflict, some sort of thing that also draws from that energy, or like something at work, something, then that's the moment that you're faced with the, do I break on this diet, or do I turn to food to like help for the immediate gratification of, you know, the immediate reward of dealing with that emotional, the other emotional, either way, it brings all your other stuff to the top.
Yes.
So the sabotage point or whatever causes you to fail or have a backwards day has nothing to do with the diet. It's all to do with, and I'm not trying to say my system's perfect. This happens on every diet. It's the fact that you have limited reserve to handle anything else in your life. And then it comes right to the surface. Is that kind of an accurate way to say it?
Yes. And when you're on a diet and you're creating a new program, like I said, when we talk about the discipline, you're trying to change patterns. You're trying to change behaviors. And it's not just a behavior. It's a mindset. It's a whole bunch of different things so that you can make it like a routine lifestyle is what you're going towards. So that, yes, the initial becomes very, you know, the output is very challenging. And because the thing is that food really is the cheapest, easiest, quickest reward that we have.
And it's safe.
And safe and legal.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're having a bad day at work, for instance, you can't really, you know, bring in your beer and drink it on the job, but you can certainly eat food.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah. I guess socially acceptable, too. Totally socially acceptable.
And you can do it anywhere, anytime. It's, and there's no problem, you know. And you are going to get a reward. And it actually changes your brain chemistry.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
If you have sugar, you know, your brain chemistry, it's going to just trigger your dopamine in your brain, which is your reward center, and you're going to feel better. I mean, many people who have emotional relationships with food, and there's no one that doesn't. It just depends on the degree of the emotional relationship, like how much that is driving your life. And if you are needing to diet, for instance, or go, then it's very likely that you have an emotional relationship with food. Mm. Otherwise, you would just be eating to your hunger.
Because that's, otherwise, how'd you get to the point where you need to diet in the first place?
That's right. And there's arguments, of course, of metabolic rate, and people are different.
Yes, that's super rare. Like,
but you still eat. If your metabolic rate, you're still eating to hunger. So people who have a faster metabolic rate will be eating more.
Well, but regardless, if there's the, like, there's very few people who they end up overweight purely just from biochemistry.
Thank you.
It's very few.
And so if that's your argument, really, it reminds, I mean, just on very quickly, like when my son was small and he had a friend and the friend would eat triple him, literally, and he was wiry, but they were the same size. Mm-hmm. My son ate to his hunger and the other one ate to his hunger. And it satisfied what their bodies were needing. He was full. The other one was still hungry. Mm-hmm. If you're eating to your hunger, then you'll eat, stop, you're satisfied. So most of us are emotional eating, whether we understand it or not. Mm-hmm. If you're setting out to lose weight, then it's very likely that you're eating for reasons other than hunger. Mm-hmm. And that will be a driving force in your struggle with food.
Right. And then when you actively... And so I guess this closes the loop on this story. So the reason why you're overeating has something to do with an emotional reason.
That's
but the reason you can make it a certain number of weeks is on kind of just pure will and force and adrenaline and excitement that you're taking on this task. But at some point that energy becomes depleted, psychic energy.
Yes.
And then the emotional problem or the emotional trigger will hit at some point when you just literally have no, you just can't. You can't quote willpower through it, and that will be the day you sort of take a backward step, and you're sitting there wondering, why am I doing this? Well, it's like, this is what you've always done, and you were riding a wave of momentum, so you haven't addressed the true underlying issue that's going to get you through to the final end whatever that emotional trigger was in the first place. Like, for instance, when people do eat, stop, eat, when people fast for 24 hours, you get to that answer within 24 hours. Like, you don't have to wait. You don't have to wait like weeks. Like the first, you know, you'll be in the middle of a fast, you'll be 20 hours into a fast, you have a fight with your spouse, and then you go reach for a cookie, and you're like, what am I doing? You're like, oh.
Uh-huh.
And then you all of a sudden realize when you and your spouse get into a tiff, one of your ways of dealing with it is food. And
yes,
or, like, I know people when they're raising kids, and when the kids literally just become overwhelming at night, like they won't go to bed, or they're just doing stuff, like they're just being, you know, they're just being kids. They just literally challenge you right to the end.
Yes.
And, you know, some best intention people, they're trying to diet, and then they're like, well, it's, I'm either gonna, like, the kid's driving me insane. So instead of this anger going directly at the kid, I'm gonna go eat some ice cream, and, you know, say, and then reiterate to their significant other, don't even try to tell me not to eat the ice cream right now, because otherwise the kid's gonna get the brunt of this. So it was kind of like, what else is that person gonna do? Because at that moment, they're so flustered, and they have nothing. And this is at the end of the day; they're just worn out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, like you said, it's safe, it's socially acceptable, it's not gonna really hurt them. It only really just hurts their weight loss goal. It's not like they're turning to alcohol and they're gonna, you know, go beat up their kid later. Like, it's a relatively safe way around dealing with being literally pushed right over the edge for that day.
Right, and does come back to, again, that idea of reward. Like, a diet is a long-term, not an immediate reward. Food gives you an immediate, quick fix.
Yeah, so, and in that moment, that person needs something right then.
You're looking for something, and you don't have an alternative coping style. And
oh, and that's a good point. Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out.
Don't have an alternative coping style. And they do know that people who succeed, where one study has shown that avoidance techniques have less benefit than learning coping styles. So rather than avoiding it, you're dealing with what the problem
is. Okay, so now we've arrived at the solution. The real solution is, when one of these situations comes up, is to learn another coping style that doesn't involve overeating.
Right.
But that's the trick. I'm sure everyone listening is like, awesome, tell me what it is. But it's individual, right? Each person has to come up with their own.
Or workout. Well, I mean, they have to come up with their own. But most people don't know how to come up with their own.
Well, I understand. Okay, sorry. I didn't say they can do it on their own. I'm saying you couldn't just say, and in that moment, go read a book, and that works for everyone.
No, you can't. They really, I mean, from my perspective, you have to really deal with what is driving the behaviors. And it might seem like random to you. Like, okay, I have an argument with my spouse or something like that. And or these little moments. But generically, if they step back, they're looking at that argument, for instance, as an example, or the kids, that's a stress factor. And generically, dealing with stress is difficult. They have different unhealthy ways of dealing with stress. And most people just don't identify this. I mean, the usual kind of comment that a person will say is, I just always thought I liked food. Like, I just like food. They don't.
Well, yeah, but we all do. That's sort of, there's no insight there. Yeah, of course.
There's no insight. But unfortunately, it is superficially kind of casually thrown around culture that, oh, this person just likes food. They're just a foodie. There's these kind of. Very shallow. It's amazing how much I actually do hear that.
Yeah.
So if you just think it's that simple, then you will not be making some of the connections. You might realize you're eating, oh yes, you're feeling down, you eat a little more, and you want that food item. And because the feeling of craving, but if you don't start to really, you know, chip away a little bit and look at some of the factors and the emotional factors, then you really won't identify them. And that's the other irony, is that that's the whole point. You're eating to escape those. So yes, because you're eating to escape it, then yes, you might not then identify what it is or look at it. Or even if you do, feel that you can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And then you get caught in a vicious circle of sabotage.
Right. And then therein lies the reason why the same person can start and get stuck again and again.
Exactly.
Because there, at no point have you ever addressed the thing that's inevitably going to get you stuck.
Exactly.
And the worst part, or I don't know the part worth commenting is, it'll surprise you every time that it happens, because you won't see it coming.
And a person believes that, just so you talked about the sheer willpower, the sheer will get them through it. They get caught in a vicious circle and an illusion of, if I just, you know, I'm going to get back on the bandwagon. And many will describe, I start the week with a good intention. I'm going to be, do this. And they feel that that good intention is going to drive them through. And no matter how every week is actually not working or they keep meeting roadblocks, that's the style, the coping style they're repetitively using. Mm-hmm. So you and that's where people get trapped, is that they keep using the exact same coping style for the problem and don't start to alter those coping styles, because if it hasn't worked before, it's not going to work long term. Mm-hmm. And but that the idea of just willpower is typically associated with dieting. It's my will. I'll drive my will. My will drive me. And that will, quite frankly, what ends up being a sabotage, because it's not going to really be long term effective. Short term, yes, but not long term.
Okay. Well, I think we kind of got to the, I think we've arrived back at where we started, so that's good. So maybe we'll leave it there. So I guess the take-home notes is, when you get to the reason you can get a start is because you're riding a wave of kind of willpower momentum, but that's going to wear out at some point. And then when you hit your sabotage point, it's going to be some other underlying, typically emotional or stress reason that pushes you to the point where you're kind of run out of reserve and your standard coping style is not going to help. And that's why you eventually give up or fail, or you can't make it the next day. And no matter how many times you start and stop, and if you hit the sab, if you're the type, if you've hit this point again and again, it's because having more willpower is not going to do it. You got to address the actual underlying reason. So have I summarized that? Is there anything else you want to add?
No, that's perfect.
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess that's we'll leave that for today. And just so for people to be familiar with the format, is we're kind of just going to tackle one issue per podcast here. And obviously, this conversation could have gone for hours and lead it into others. So we're trying to at least stay on point. I mean, this could have turned into all kinds of other things. So, but that's the pattern. And then we'll be back in a couple of weeks with the next topic. So for Nicola,
and please,
go ahead.
Yes, send in questions, please.
Yeah, send in questions. Email them to me. Email them to Nicola. I'm going to put up both of our emails, because I know everyone has these questions. Everyone seems to be shy when I first ask the questions. People are humming and hawing about stuff, but I can tell if I just read your blogs and the forum posts, everything is there. Like, I just pulled this one from the forum because I know everyone. This happens to everybody. So, you know, if you don't want to publicly announce something, just email directly to me or Nicola. So, and that's, you know, we can start shedding as much light as you want on stuff that comes up. But you got to ask. Otherwise, we'll continue doing them, and I'll kind of guess at what the issue is. But it's better if you just tell us. So we'll leave it at that for today, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks. So for Nicola Bird, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Venus Index Podcast.